Early next year, scientific institutions in the United States and Great Britain will mark the 50th anniversary of one of science's greatest discoveries. In April of 1953, James Watson, Francis Crick, and Morris Wilkins identified the substance of life, the structure of DNA. They later shared a Nobel Prize. Their discovery depended heavily on the work of a woman, chemist Rosalind Franklin, whose research was used without her knowledge or permission. Watson's memoir of the discovery dismisses Franklin as frumpy, hostile, and unimaginative. A later work by a friend casts Franklin as a feminist icon, cheated of recognition. Now, a new book enters the fray, and it paints a more complex portrait. Brenda Maddox is the author of Rosalind Franklin, The Dark Lady of DNA, and she joins us now from London. Brenda, what was Rosalind Franklin's particular skill, and how did that contribute to the discovery of the structure of DNA?
She became particularly gifted in the technique of X-ray crystallography. She could take photographs of crystals by shining light through them and interpret the patterns. And she had a particular genius at aligning mind and hand. One of her French colleagues told me she had golden hands. And she just got better, clearer pictures of the molecule of DNA than anybody had had before.
And how did this work then trigger the aha for James Watson and Francis Crick?
Well, it really was for the aha, and we have his book to thank for it. As he said, my jaw fell open and my pulse began to race, was James Watson's. Morris Wilkins showed him Rosalind's photograph, the best of the DNA photographs. It's called 51 in the legend. And when Watson looked at it, it was a stark X, a black cross, and he realized this was two arms of a helix, and this was the confirmation, the proof he needed, what he and Francis Crick had been theorizing about, he now saw a picture of, and this confirmed that his hunch was right, and they came up with a model which we now know is the secret of life, two chains which come apart and copy themselves.
Wilkins showed Watson Franklin's work without her permission and without her knowledge. Was this improper, and is this discovery then sort of tainted by what might be considered to be improper?
I would say clouded. The fact is, and I think people who see Rosalind as a tremendous victim in all this forget, that Rosalind was working at King's College London with Morris Wilkins, but she hated King's. Almost as soon as she got there, began plotting to get out, and she was leaving all her work behind. So it was perfectly natural that Wilkins should have had these photographs and that he should have shown them to Watson. Watson, what he saw confirmed his hunch about the helical structure of DNA, and he raced back to Cambridge, as much as you could race on a train in 1951, showed them to Crick. I think later when it comes to giving credit, that perhaps there is a cloud of unease that they didn't give her the credit they ought to have given. They didn't acknowledge to her openly the help they had got from seeing her work. But the sheer fact of their seeing it, though it muddies the story a little bit, I don't think there was anything wrong in that.
Did Franklin herself appreciate what she had?
She appreciated the beauty of the photographs, and she had written up three academic papers describing what she had learned from her own photographs about the internal structure of the molecule, and she had got as far, almost as they had, in deciding that there were two chains inside the molecule. So she hadn't got that far, but she was very close.
She also seemed a bit more conservative in her interpretation of this data than Watson and Crick.
Rosalind had been trained at her girls' school, St. Paul's Girls' School in London, at Cambridge, and also by her family, to be very, very cautious, not to invite criticism, not to take leaps in the dark. And these were very aristocratic Anglo-Jews, and they became more English than the English. And she would never have talked with a loud voice or waved her hands or worn bright colors. Her family, good manners, reticence, quiet, all that was bred into her. Don't do anything which will invite criticism. And I don't think it's fair that they said, oh, she's a kind of Miss Plod. She didn't understand her data. She was just too cautious, you know. I have so much sympathy with the things which held her back from seeing, from rushing to proclaim, as they did, look what we've found. But I think they should have said, Rosalind, we couldn't have done it without you.
The Nobel Prizes will be announced next week, and when the Nobel was awarded for this work in 1962, Franklin was not among the winners. Why was she overlooked?
Well, the blunt reason is she was dead. In their wisdom or whatever, how they give out these prizes by very odd rules. One is no posthumous awards. Rosalind died, and the real tragedy in her life was not that she didn't discover the destruction of DNA, but that she got ovarian cancer at the age of 37. She was a pretty rotten fate for anybody, and she'd already made a distinguished scientific reputation and had published dozens of papers in Nature and eminent journals like that. Anyway, she wasn't in the running because she was dead.
Franklin has become the symbol to feminists, to some women scientists, a symbol of the male dominance of science, of opportunities and credit denied to women in science. Is that a fair characterization of what actually happened to Rosalind Franklin?
No, yes and no. Women were not doing well at the time. They're still, in many ways, not doing well now, particularly in physics. On the other hand, part of her problems were of her own making, and part of it was her extreme sensitivity as a Jewish woman when she found herself in this very ecclesiastical environment. King's College London is an establishment run, unlike the other colleges in the University of London, by the Church of England. And she felt so out of place. She was more comfortable with colleagues who were Jewish. She just pulled in on herself, and I think the whole environment, as well as any misogynism that might have existed in the wider scientific world, I think that I can't see one without the other.
Brenda, I spoke this week with a spokesman at the National Human Genome Research Institute here, which is planning a symposium next April commemorating this DNA discovery. And he tells me it's not clear now how or if Rosalind Franklin's contribution will be recognized. What do you think about that?
I recognize their dilemma. It is often forgotten that when Watson and Crick's paper appeared in Nature on April 25th, 1953, there was also a paper by Wilkins and two of his colleagues, and also a paper by Rosalind and Gosling. So in a way, she was in at the big announcement, though it's only the Watson and Crick paper that more or less broke the news. She's got to be an important contributing player. And I wouldn't be surprised if by next April they find a way to give her work credit, even though if she won't be center stage.
Brenda Maddox is the author of Rosalind Franklin, The Dark Lady of DNA. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.